You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life. I'm Mike Pecanato, your host for Unterwegs, the En Route podcast. And in the next couple of episodes, we'll be talking with Stephen and Jenny Jones, going back to our previous conversations, kind of springboarding from Stephen's book, Transitions Across Cultures, and his Cross-Cultural Transitions Handbook. And this time, we're going to be really diving into culture shock. Our format is, as always, to try to take a look at this in three sections. First, this week, we'll be taking a look at what is culture shock. And Stephen and Jenny will join us for that conversation now. Stephen and Jenny, welcome back. It's so great to have you guys back on the show and to be able to go back into our Transitions Across Culture series as we're kind of diving into this resource again. And it's been a fun experience for me to walk through this with you before you were here and then now again while you are here.
Yeah, it's been a good way to reflect, even though I think that that's part of our like lifestyle in some ways, but like to intentionally reflect has been a good tool in our experience.
And so today we're starting a new three-part series. And the three-part series that we're starting today is on culture shock, which we've touched on before, but now we're really going to introduce it kind of as its own entity, which it really does need. The phrase culture shock has been used by people when they experience something that surprises them or stresses them out in a new culture. But culture shock is actually different than that. How would you define culture shock?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an important distinction for the way that we use the term. Sometimes you'll hear people saying, I didn't know how to order food at the restaurant. That was such a culture shock. And that's not what we're talking about, right? We'd talk about that as being like a culturally stressful incident. But culture shock is much more what happens because of this cumulative disorientation. That's probably the most important phrase connected to culture shock. And it's this idea that over and over and over and over again, you get disoriented, often in very little ways. So it's not necessarily like, oh, I don't know how to speak the language. It's more what happens when 100 times in a week, that becomes a small problem. And you get disoriented just a little bit over and over and over again. And that adds up. Sometimes we talk about like a bucket that fills up and there's maybe a little leak in the bucket and you don't want the bucket to overflow, right? So the leak is helpful for the water level to come down. And it doesn't, you know, come down fast enough when you have so many things filling the bucket.
And I think one of the important things there is not to take away from the impact of culture clashes or cultural miscommunications, because when a group comes like we just experienced and they're here for 10 days, those cultural clashes that they experience are super real for them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's just recognizing it as a distinct phenomenon, because a culturally stressful incident matters, right? That's part of your experience for sure. It's the question of, is there something else that happens when you're in a place longer that is distinct from all of those little incidents?
What comes to mind even is a different kind of metaphor, is that, you know, having the pebble in your shoe and versus how long is that pebble in the shoe? How long are you walking or hiking, or what kind of hiking are you doing? And do you get more pebbles in your shoe? Do you get a rock? Yeah, the longer that you're in a place, the more significant that feels.
Sometimes that's hard for people that come on short-term trips to understand, because they want their experience to mimic or to mirror the experience of long-term workers so much. So they leave after 10 days and think, okay, now we have a good understanding of what it's like. And they do in some of the things, but that's also a curated trip mm-hmm. for them that's intentionally exposing them to some of the stresses that we experience. We want that to be part of their experience. But I think the way you explained it, Jenny, is helpful, because we have to deal with that for a long time, sometimes not knowing where can I stop and take these pebbles out of my shoe, or how do I get them out of my shoe?
Or does the blister form, or does it heal, or does it keep? Is it in the same spot?
Or do you develop a limp, or, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, some of those long-term effects that, you know, on a 15-minute walk the pebble in your shoe you can put up with. But yeah.
When we're talking about culture shock, there is usually a relatively predictable pattern that's a part of that. How would you describe that predictable pattern?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's important to know it's not the same for everybody, and there are all sorts of reasons why it would differ. But there does seem to be, you know, something that's pretty consistent for a lot of people. So we kind of look at it in three or four stages. The first is often this kind of emotional high. So you get to a place and it's kind of, you know, you might call it like the Disneyland experience. It's like, oh, this is so exciting. You know, it's so fun to be here. So glad that I'm here. The food is wonderful. The way people dress is super interesting. Oh, they have different holidays. That's cool. You know, a lot of, for the most part, kind of above the waterline ways of seeing culture. And it's just exciting. It's, you get to experience a new way of being yourself. It can be kind of freeing. Can be really fun. And that is an authentic experience of culture if you understand that what you're experiencing is, you know, in this kind of emotional high window, you're not actually experiencing the host culture in the way that people who live there or are from there experiencing. You're experiencing this phenomena that happens when you go somewhere else.
I just think of the idea of what we are experiencing as an emotional high is also in many ways so normal for the people around us. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't walk to the tram and say, this public transportation system is phenomenal. I don't even need a car here. Not the majority of them. The majority of them are just bored that they have to get on a tram and go to work again. Mm-hmm. But in that emotional high stage, it a lot of times it's just, it works. Look at everything is just working. Except for your guys' experience, where everything is always under construction.
Yeah, we're on strike. Yeah.
How long normally is there a general range in how long that emotional high lasts?
So it really depends. So maybe let's talk through the other stages first, and then we'll talk about that.
Okay. That next stage then is disenchantment, discouragement, and depression.
Yeah. So this is where it starts to get hard. So the fun kind of wears off, the shine wears off, and you begin to experience things just being difficult. And it's sometimes it's like in your face difficulty. People are like, I don't want you to be here, right? So that's obviously hard. But it could be nothing like that. It could be people might be ambivalent about whether you're there. And it could be just the reality of living that pebble in the shoe sense of like over and over and over again, I think I know how things work, and then I don't. And it's just so discouraging to fail over and over and over and over again, or to feel like, okay, I have to really screw up my courage to go through the checkout line again, you know, at the grocery store. And several times a week going through this exercise of anticipating the reality that you don't know what's going to happen at the cash register, which is such a banal thing, right? It's just such a basic part of life. And so it doesn't feel like there's some big opposition to what you're doing or you're being there. It's just a little bit exhausting all the time. And there are hundreds of things like that. Like there's so many different parts. Like, do you know how to cross the street? Do you know how to pay your bills? Do you know what to do when mail comes? Do you know what to do when mail doesn't come because it's been held at the post office, right? Like all these different things that just seem so everyday. Or the question of, which we talked about in a previous episode of, you know, where do you look when you're walking down the street, but over and over and over again, being slightly disoriented, it just adds up and it gets discouraging. And so what was really fun becomes hard. And then at the same time, you start to miss things from back home. So ways that you could kind of cope with feeling a little bit off aren't available to you. Something for our family is cheddar cheese. Like, where's the cheddar cheese? And occasionally you can find it and it's like, yay, we found cheddar, you know? And it's kind of a dumb thing. It's just cheddar cheese. But not having access to something like that, that is just kind of your normal pattern, makes it harder to cope with the discouragement. And then it can go really deep. The discouragement can kind of, because it is all of these small things accumulating over time, it can just really, really weigh you down. And that's why the words there are kind of increasingly negative, right? The discouragement, disenchantment, and then even depression. And some of the symptoms of culture shock kind of mimic or mirror some of the symptoms of clinical depression. And so I think it's important to recognize, like, no, culture shock actually can take a tremendous toll on people.
I think part of that is it sinks into your identity. Like when you feel like you identify in your home culture as being a competent, capable, functioning adult, and then you're put in a different culture and you're still an adult, right? You don't all of a sudden turn into looking like a child, but yeah, you are like, oh, I need to function like an adult here? And it's, you can't, like, not in the same capacity. And so depending on whether you're an independent person or more communally driven, that can be, again, very disorienting to some core identity pieces about who you are as a person.
And I think in this, it's not that these pieces of culture are necessarily evil.
Mm-mm.
Cheese is a great example, because the varieties of cheese,
oh my goodness,
in a European supermarket is almost overwhelming in and of itself.
It's amazing. It's part of what gives you the emotional high when you first get here. It's like, cheese! There's so much cheese. Yeah.
But they don't have cheddar. Well, they do, but, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. certain weeks and sometimes in a certain section, and just the discouragement of going, hoping that you can get cheddar for your burger and not being there, it surprises you sometimes, but that doesn't make it less real.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I think honestly with the cheddar cheese, what we're really looking for is the yellow color. You know, it's like, that's all we're looking for. It's just, it's just the familiarity of it.
Or the American cheese, right? The stuff that just melts and disappears and, you know, adds salt, but, you know, where's the American cheese?
And do you find that this pattern is generally followed? First, there's some disenchantment, and then there's some discouragement, and then it goes to depression? Or can it just jump right into any one of those and maybe surprise you with the intensity of emotions?
Yeah, it seems like that really depends on the person and the situation. I think the other thing that's often happening at the same time is that as you get to this stage of culture shock, it's like you've been there usually long enough that people are expecting you to function relatively well. And so the combination of increased expectations, both from others and from yourself, and an increasing load of this cumulative disorientation hit at the same time. And so it is super confusing, right? It's like, well, I've been here long enough, I should be able to, you know, fill in the blank. And then when you can't, or you don't have the energy to, it's like this negative cycle that feeds itself. Like, why am I even here? I can't even do anything. I can't even go to the grocery store. You know, how am I supposed to do whatever my job is if I can't even check my mail without freaking out?
A lot of times the things that you were so proud and happy to be able to do because I can handle this, I want to show that I'm independent, become overwhelming too.
Mm-hmm.
One of those stages is depression. And you talked already about how that often looks like clinical depression. What words could you maybe give for people who are listening to this, who are looking to go on the field or who are currently starting into the time in international ministry and are already struggling with depression?
So I'm not a licensed therapist, so, you know, all the caveats that apply there. I would say that what I've observed is sometimes people who have clinical depression, this is not the majority, but there are some who think, okay, I'm going to have an opportunity to reset and redefine myself as I go internationally. And at first, because of that emotional high, it can feel like that's working. But if you act like you don't need mental health support, then when that you come crashing into that second stage, it can hit really hard. So I always encourage people, hey, be sure you're talking with your therapist, be sure you're talking with your doctor. Like if you're on medicines, this is not the right time to stop taking them, particularly without talking with your provider, because that emotional high that can first happen can kind of give people the false impression that they're past whatever is causing their depression, and that's generally not the case. Generally, so what we've tried to do in the past. Like I would have students take a psychological assessment and then go meet with a counselor before they would go on a trip. And part of the idea was just to demystify the counseling office if they'd never been there, right? Like just to say like, hey, like you're probably going to need more help than you think you're going to need. And you need to not be afraid. And we need to eliminate the taboo because like the mental health challenges of transitioning across cultures are really significant. And if you already are dealing with something, in some ways you might be better equipped because you have a habit of talking with somebody or you have support already. You're not afraid to get the support you need. But definitely don't think, okay, well, because I'm going, I'm no longer going to struggle with this.
In your book, you also say, hey, if you're experiencing this depression for the first time, chances are that as the cycle continues, that depression will also lift in some way. But that's not in any way saying, but don't take advantage of mental health assistances mm-hmm. that are available.
Yeah. And sometimes it doesn't. And again, speaking out of my lane, just something that I am aware of, there's something called adjustment disorder, you know, where sometimes the difficulties connected to culture shock can persist. There are other things that would cause adjustment disorder, but it can persist beyond kind of the expected time frame. And then that's something else that needs diagnosis and support.
So if the first stage, the first part of that pattern is emotional high, and then the second part is that disenchantment, discouragement, and depression, what's the third?
So the third is the growing competence and confidence. And that is where you get into this slow build. There are small wins all the way along. There are small wins in the emotional high. There are small wins in the, you know, as you're kind of falling off the cliff down into this really dark, hard time. And then there are small wins as you're on your way back up. The question is kind of which are there more of, right? And the small wins start to build on each other. And even in that, it's not like it's a straight line back up, you know, in some ways a roller coaster is too smooth of a picture. But if you think about going down one side of a canyon and then up the other side of the canyon, right, you're probably going to have to go up and down on your way back up just to find a clear path. And it's like that. But you find ways to move forward and start actually figuring out how some things work. It's not like that's when you have suddenly reached linguistic competency or even cultural competency. It's more that you figured out how to make life work for you in that space.
And that competence is also on a sliding scale, right? I mean, you feel more competent in certain situations and then still less competent in others, which is why it takes a kind of a slow build up mm-hmm. back to that feeling confident.
Yeah. And then, I mean, what you're getting back to, and which is kind of the fourth, if you want to look at the fourth stage, is the new normal. And if you think about the old normal had its own ups and downs, right? So the new normal, it's not like you are now like, okay, well, I'm, you know, everything's solved. It's like, now I'm back to the ability to handle the ups and downs of life in the way that is still going up and down. It's just that the context is that I'm more stable than I feel in the hard parts of culture shock.
I think that's an important clarification because we all seem to view the past through rose-tinted glasses. Everybody talks about the good old days, but it wasn't like everything was easy before people come into an intercultural experience. In their own culture, there were challenges as well.
Yeah, I think the challenge in that is you forget the daily stresses of living in normal life, that it's like, no, it's hard to make decisions even in your home culture at times, or there's more stress piled on top of you. It's just more obvious when you're not in your home culture.
I think of mailing a package from small town Minnesota was not necessarily an easy process. There were still stresses that were involved in it. I just knew how it worked. Mm-hmm. And until I learn how it works here, there's added stress. But once I learn how it works, it's still not necessarily easier. There's still a process I have to go through. And so remembering that there's discomfort in some of those daily tasks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like working with the internet or cable company back home was miserable. You know, working with the internet and cable company here is also miserable. But also, I don't understand anything.
Right.
You know, so it's like, yeah.
There are also some recognizable symptoms of culture shock. And it's important for people sometimes to hear them because it gives words to some of the things that they're experiencing. What are some of those symptoms?
Ongoing anxiety or boredom, feelings of homesickness, missing home an unusual amount, feeling of being helpless or unable to take care of yourself, even if you are trying hard to do so.
Yeah, and with that, even sometimes the feeling that no one will let you take care of yourself, which can kind of be discouraging. There's ongoing feelings of depression, sadness, or inadequacy, sometimes a fatigue that doesn't resolve even if you're getting enough sleep. And that's, of course, after jet lag, right? We're talking, you know, sometimes months after jet lag. Exaggerated or new inability to make decisions. So if you couldn't make decisions before, you know, you might still not be able to make decisions. This is something in addition to that. Increased new or overwhelming self-doubt, unexplained emotions and emotional outbursts like anger, weeping, or laughter.
An irrational belief that others are intentionally sabotaging you. Physical illness, persistent colds, difficulties with digestion beyond normal difficulties. Physically hiding away from others. Such as spending excessive amounts of time in your bedroom.
Or bathroom.
Being physically present but mentally withdrawing, such as daydreaming.
Spending large amounts of time reading, watching TV, scrolling through your phone, movies. Spending large amounts of time sleeping, interacting with people who are interacting only with people who are culturally like you, or for some people, interacting only with people who are culturally different from you.
Having an inability to pay attention to others or to tasks for a long period of time. Losing the ability to study or work effectively or to think clearly. Yeah. Eating excessively or compulsively.
Drinking mood-altering drinks like coffee or alcohol excessively or compulsively. New or exaggerated need for cleanliness or an unusually heightened awareness of uncleanliness. Irritability, irrational anger, noticeably increased tension with coworkers, teammates, peers, or family. The exaggeration of controlling tendencies, even if those are for the like so-called benefit of others.
An increased reliance on simplified frames for understanding differences. So yeah, really digging into your own stereotypes or what your own culture, what you're used to. Smoldering or expressive hostility towards members of the host culture or your own. And unusual levels of verbal, physical, or sexual aggressiveness.
So there are a lot of symptoms there that would also be found in people who are experiencing inordinate amounts of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's accidental.
Right. Yeah.
Because that the culture and the constant interaction with that is becoming one of the major stressors in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's part of what is a little difficult with culture shock. You usually have going on at the same time the transition experience, which we talked about previously, right? So the neutral zone of the transition is happening at the same time that you're having this cumulative disorientation from the culture itself. And so it's not necessarily so much about the host culture as it is about the reality that you're not from there, if that makes sense. So it's not about, so for us living here in Germany, our experience of culture shock happens to be happening in reaction to German culture, but it's really much more about us than it is about German culture. And we would have, you know, different stimuli, but the same kind of reactions if we were in Japan or if we were in, you know, Mexico, wherever you'd find yourself, the particulars are going to be different, but the culture shock response is a similar thing because it's about over and over and over again, not knowing quite how things work.
And some people may live in circumstances or situations where the culture is much more grating to the values that they bring in. It may be, from their perspective, much more different, much more oppressive. But that doesn't mean that people in any situation that's different, where they're living for an extended period of time, aren't also going to experience culture shock. It's really not one of those things where you can say, well, I have a right to experience more culture shock because my situation is so different. Everyone's going to experience it in a long-term exposure to a different culture.
Yeah, I mean, so if you're really encountering the culture, it's super rare that you wouldn't experience culture shock. Some people will say, well, I don't get culture shock, which is kind of a funny way to put it, but or I don't experience that. Something we've seen sometimes with third culture kids who grew up moving around the world is sometimes they'll make it a part of their identity that they're really good at navigating culture without experiencing culture shock. And that just seems not to really be quite accurate.
Well, I think there's even the sense of like, just because, you know, we're not living in the jungle, we're not living in a hut, but it doesn't mean that it isn't different from where we came from, because it is.
And I think just one of the things that's important with culture shock, there is a lot written about it. And some of the resources are more helpful and some are maybe less helpful, but there are some really good resources to understanding psychologically what's going on with culture shock. So we'll post some stuff, or I'll give you some of that stuff to post with the show notes.
Well, thanks guys for helping us unpack kind of on a intellectual, theoretical level, what is culture shock? And when we come back in episode 2, we'll dig into it a little bit more and talk about some more of the personal experiences a person can have with culture shock.
Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of I Am Intercultural, a division of Exigent Communication, in partnership with Envision Berlin. Please like, share, and subscribe. Podcast music is by Mike Piccinato.